Now then, a very good morning to you. Welcome to the papers for Thursday, the 21st of March, in the year 2024. Hope all is well with you. Lovely, mild spring morning here in Salford. Let's, without messing around, go to the front pages of today's papers. We'll start today with The Times. Headline: Defeats deal fresh blow to Rwanda migrant bill. Ping pong. There is a game of ping pong going on in Westminster. Number of papers leading with this. This is the government's much maligned Rwanda bill, where asylum seekers attempting to come to the UK would be sent to Rwanda. It passed the House of Commons. This bill went to the House of Lords. The House of Lords sent it back down to the House of Commons with a series of recommended amendments. The House of Commons said no, sent it back to the House of Lords. And last night, the House of Lords defeated the bill 7 times. That's what they are reporting today. 7 times. Defeats deal, fresh blow to Rwanda migrant bill is the headline. Just to give you the absolute facts here, so that you're not under any illusion about what's going on. 7 proposed changes, including a provision to ensure due regard for domestic and international law, were passed by peers. Okay, so MPs will now have to vote on the bill again, and this will delay its passage until sometime after Easter. So that's how it works, right? So the House of Lords looked at it again and said, no, let's put some amendments on it again. The Lords voted to approve 7 amendments. It now goes back to the House of Commons. Ping pong. Will it ever be passed and approved? Who knows? And maybe you might say, who cares? That is the front page of the Times. The Financial Times: inflation's fall to 3.4% keeps summer rate cuts on track. Also on the front page of the Financial Times: rare genetic disease therapy becomes world's most expensive drug at $4 million. That's interesting. I might get into that a bit later on in the day. The Daily Mail: mortgage hope as economy turns a corner at last, is the headline. And that's the fall in inflation mentioned by the Financial Times, confirmed yesterday. A tiny, tiny, tiny fall in inflation, which I do not believe will have much of an impact on the lives of people who are really struggling at the moment in this terrible cost of living crisis that we talk about so much. The economy is turning a corner, according to the Mail, saying that mortgage rates might come down within months. There's also a photograph on the front page of the Mail of Kate Middleton, the Princess of Wales. 3 staff at clinic are investigated over access to Kate's records, is the headline. This has been the week's big story, hasn't it? The whereabouts of Kate Middleton, a video shared by The Sun, which a lot of people are not convinced is actually a video of Kate. And then we learned that the hospital in Marylebone, where she had abdominal surgery in January, the hospital is investigating staff who attempted to access her records. That's also on the Mail. The Eye: UK on track for summer interest rate cuts after inflation falls. The Daily Express: pension triple lock will be in Tory manifesto, is the lead story. The policy, by the way, the triple lock, ensures that pensions rise every year, okay? It has been in every Conservative manifesto since 2010. And the Tories are saying that if they are re-elected, it's unlikely they'll win a majority. Again, the Tories, but that pensions will be protected in future. The Sun headline: street fighter, is the headline. What's going on? The Sun leads what it claims is a photograph of the actress Tina O'Brien, who's been in Coronation Street for many, many years now. It says the photograph shows her fighting outside her Manchester home in an altercation. She has told the Sun through a spokesperson that she was the victim of an unprovoked assault. Greater Manchester Police are on the case. The Daily Mirror. Corey legend exclusive. The Daily Mirror has a photograph of Julie Goodyear, who's a legendary soap actress. Coincidentally, Coronation Street. She was in Coronation Street for years and years. She was the take no prisoners landlady of The Rover's Return. Was Bette Lynch the character, Julie Goodyear. The Mirror says that she's losing a battle with dementia, sadly. And there's a photograph of her today with her husband who's looking after her. Good luck to her. The Metro. Fentanyl Phantom is the headline. Couples killer used 20 fake personas to help 2-year murder mission. This is about Luke DeWitt, who was found guilty yesterday of murdering Carol and Stephen Baxter by secretly giving them the powerful drug fentanyl. That's a crime story, so I wouldn't know much about that. The Daily Star headline is, "There's gold in them thar Shropshire Hills." So the Star is leading with the discovery of a gold nugget worth about £30,000 in Shropshire. So they're calling it a gold rush in the West Midlands. And the Star says there are fears locally that it might spark that very thing, that people might start turning up from all over the place to try and find gold. So those were the front pages of today's dailies. Let's go inside. And there are some interesting and important stories inside. Let's start with The Telegraph. Listen to this. Mental health culture has gone too far, says Mel Stride. Mental health culture has gone too far, says Mel Stride. Now, Stride is the Work and Pensions Secretary, okay? And he has claimed that Britain's approach to mental health is in danger of having gone too far, and that normal anxieties of life are being labelled as illness. He was speaking while unveiling plans to make 150,000 people who are currently signed off work with mild conditions, to make them look for a job. He said, Stride, that the benefits bill was being pushed up by this problem where people are being signed off work where they needn't be because their conditions are mild, because the normal anxieties of life are being labelled as an illness. Now, he's given an interview to The Telegraph. He suggested an increased public focus on talking about mental health had led to people effectively self-diagnosing conditions. His intervention comes amid growing alarm over the ballooning welfare bill, which is set to hit £100 billion this year, and the impact of worklessness on the economy. The rising cost is being fuelled by a sharp increase in the number of people, especially the young, who are on long-term sickness payments for mental health conditions. Stride warned that as a culture, we seem to have forgotten that work is good for mental health, and he suggested people were being signed off too easily. While I'm grateful for today's much more open approach to mental health, there is a danger it's gone too far, he said. There is a real risk now that we are labelling the normal ups and downs of human life as medical conditions, which then actually serve to hold people back and ultimately drive up the benefit bill. He's a bit late to the party, isn't he, Mel Stride? I can speak for myself as a broadcaster. I've been talking about this for more than a decade now. I've laid the blame squarely at pharmaceutical companies, but also at completely bought and paid for regulatory bodies, that is, medicine regulatory bodies, who have allowed pharmaceutical companies to take ordinary human conditions, label them as medical conditions, create or make or manufacture medicines for those fake, you know, newly invented conditions, which, as I said, are basically normal life experiences, and then sell those medicines to people. It's astonishing to me that he's talking about it now. I mean, governments have known about this for years because governments have basically enabled it to happen, haven't they? As for, you know, an increase in discussions around mental health, we've been plagued by society has been plagued in recent years by news programmes constantly talking to celebrities, whether it be celebrities in TV, radio or music or sport or literature, talking to celebrities about being more open about their mental health struggles. This has become an epidemic. Every time you turn on the television, somebody's on there talking about their mental health struggles and encouraging everybody else to open up and talk about their mental health struggles, which is madness. Life is tough, right? It throws challenges at you. Every day of the week you are challenged somehow as you go about your daily life. Our ancestors, our parents, our grandparents just got on with it. Just got on with their lives and dealt with whatever life threw at them with a stiff upper lip. You know, and it'll be all right in the morning kind of attitude. So it's interesting, this guy coming at it. I've no time for any political party, especially the Conservative Party, but it's interesting he's talking about it now, something we've been talking about for years. But, and there is a massive but, they have fucked with the mental health of younger people, particularly in the last 4 years. They are continuing to fuck with the mental health of younger people by terrorising them constantly with tales of the apocalypse, you know, coming climate disasters if we don't change our ways. So this is an interesting one. On the one hand, yes, no doubt about it. You know, no doubt about it. There has been a huge focus, a public focus on talking about mental health and beating down people with incessant lectures about how it's okay to talk about your mental health struggles. It's okay to be mentally ill when people are not really mentally ill, you know, or it's not so common for people to be mentally ill. As I said, life is tough and life is challenging. So it's interesting. That's definitely true. And pharmaceutical companies and governments allowing them do it, labelling normal life experiences as somehow traumatic and in need of intervention. That has gone on. But also at the same time, they have messed around with the minds of people, children, younger people for years now with these lies about climate change and Ukraine and Russia. Didn't we read a study recently where it talked about anxiety levels being off the scale among younger children who, when questioned about these things in primary schools, talked about Ukraine and world wars and, you know, and climate collapse and stuff like this. So it's much more nuanced, this, than people just, signing themselves off work too easily. It's a much more nuanced one. We might come back to it later. Today or later on in next week, maybe we might come back to it on the Richie Allen Show. Here's one in the Times. Workplace diversity courses are just snake oil, says Badenoch, or Badenoch. I don't know how you pronounce her name. The business secretary. She says that British companies shouldn't waste money on diversity training in the workplace because it is ineffective and often fails to achieve its stated objectives. Now, this is a report which was commissioned by the government. It's concluded this, right? In a strong attack on the UK's multi-million pound equality, diversity and inclusion industry, a panel of experts said there was little evidence that such interventions were successful. They also warned that companies too often outsourced or delegated their equality training to those with potentially conflicting incentives that had a proliferation of different initiatives. Now, the report was endorsed by Kemi Badenoch, the business secretary, and also the Minister for Women and Equalities. She said some groups and companies offering diversity training were making large amounts of money selling snake oil. She went on to say, Badenoch, there are lots of people who just cook up stuff and say, I've got a course, why don't you buy my course? They're making money out of selling stuff that isn't evidence-based. The report said that the UK employs almost twice as many diversity and inclusion... let me say that again. It's early in the morning. The report cited research showing that the UK employs almost twice as many diversity and inclusion workers per 10,000 employees than any other country. In the public sector, there were more than 10,000 public diversity and inclusion jobs, costing around £557 million a year. That's an amazing thing. More than 10,000 public diversity and inclusion jobs at a cost of £557 million a year. It said one academic study had found an absence of meaningful or durable improvement in organisational culture and workplace morale as a result of the training. It said it also failed to improve the hiring, retention or promotion of diverse candidates. Badenoch commissioned a report herself, said while employers had a duty to fully grasp and apply the law, Badenoch said, Badenoch is a black woman, it was not the job of companies to have a, quote, sophisticated knowledge of the demographic, historical and socio-economic debates relating to the relative advantage and disadvantages between groups. That is telling. Companies do not have a duty. It is not their job to have a knowledge or a grasp of the demographic, historical and socio-economic debates relating to the relative advantage and disadvantages between groups. And of course, this is what really should happen. Companies should ditch, they should bin all of this diversity bollocks. Realistically, you know. Because what company, what business, show me a business that is in the business, for want of a better way of putting it, of making money for its owners and its shareholders. Show me a business that is not looking for the most suitable candidate for any job that it advertises. Surely, if you run a business and you're in it to make money for yourself and your family, and if you have a big business with shareholders, you know, shareholders you have an obligation to make money, surely you don't give a rat's arse about the background of the candidates that you interview for any role. Surely you're only interested in which of them is likely to hit the ground running and bring value to your company. This diversity inclusion stuff is monumental bollocks. It is madness. And to see them spending £600 million a year on this, and then you have a report commissioned by the government, which was influenced, this report, it spoke to everybody from every background. And they come back and they say the whole thing is one massive load of bollocks and it doesn't achieve anything. But it was never necessary. If a company is not looking for the most qualified candidates, and if the company is trying to satisfy diversity quotas, in the opinion of this broadcaster, and I've never really run companies, the company that's focusing on diversity rather than on the best candidates is going to be a company that ultimately fails. What I'm saying is, positive discrimination is a nonsense. And I do not believe that in 2024 that companies are prioritising that companies are hiring white candidates because they are prejudiced in favour of white candidates to the detriment of their own bottom line. I don't believe it. There's no evidence of it. So Badenoch is probably right here. The diversity training and all of that old shit that they carry on with in companies today is counterproductive at the very least and is damaging to companies' bottom line at the worst. Let me remind you of a story I told you on the Richie Allen Show. My better half, a great woman, works for one of the biggest companies in the world, financial services provider, okay? A couple of years ago, maybe a little bit longer, during the worst of the lockdowns, she was invited to participate in an allyship program. She was invited to give up some of her free time to sit in on Zoom calls, to listen to the lived experience of some of her LGBTQ colleagues. I have a very tough French woman as a partner. She's beautiful, she's soft, she's gorgeous, she's lovely, but she's hard as nails. She told them to go and fuck themselves. That's exactly what she said to them. Why do you want me to sit in on this? So that you'll better understand, you know, your LGBT colleagues and diversity, and it'll be better for relationships and all that. I don't give a fuck about what my LGBTQ plus colleagues' experiences have been in their lives. I'm not interested, she said. I'm only interested in, are they up to the job? I've got to work with them. She's a very senior accountant, you see. And I'm not interested in them. I don't care who they sleep with, who they live with. I don't care which God they pray to. That is none of my business. So no, thank you. I won't be sitting in on any such training. I had to laugh. I was listening to her on the call, telling her bosses to get fucked. Wonderful. That's what you do, you see. Fuck off. But you've got unconscious bias, Richie. Fuck off. Maybe I have unconscious bias against morons like you who tell me I have unconscious bias. I don't have unconscious bias. I don't care what people are. I only care if they're any good. When I worked in radio, I've had various roles in radio, program controller, where I had to work with DJs, I had to manage presenters. You know, I couldn't care less what they are. Are they any good? Do they sound well on air? Are they funny when they need to be? Are they challenging their guests? I couldn't give a shit what their sexuality is or what colour their skin is. Anyway, The Times. Enough of this bollocks, says the BBG. The Times. London is the most anti-Semitic city in the West, says Israeli minister. He can get fucked as well. His name is Amichai Chikli. He's a member of Israel's ruling Likud party. And according to The Times, he has a history of making inflammatory statements. He's a genocidal bollocks. That's all he is. Scumbag. 33,000 Palestinians are dead and counting. It's going to be a lot more when they eventually start to move the rubble. Whenever this genocide stops and they start to repair Gaza, they'll find bodies everywhere. It'll be 60, 70,000 men, women and children. The cheek of this bastard, this murderer, this racist apartheid fucker to say that London is anti-Semitic. It's all they have, you see. It's their only defence when they're challenged, you know, for what they're doing in Gaza. He says it's anti-Semitic in London. He said, wait for it, Britain's immigration policies are at fault for this growth in extremism and intolerance. There's no real extremism or intolerance in London or in any other UK city. This is a scumbag. He even cited the Magna Carta. This wanker, you know. This Likud party. I do hope that God does exist and eventually they'll have to answer for their crimes in Gaza. You know, the cheek of him. He went on to say that freedom of speech no longer exists in Britain. How ironic. I mean, they're trying to kill freedom of speech in Britain. But, you know, but there's nothing anti-Semitic about that. They want to kill freedom of speech for everybody. Nobody's exempt from it. Let's have a look at one in the Express, which is interesting. Falling birth rates could leave UK with a reliance on open immigration. Falling birth rates. Are we not shagging as much as we used to? Is that the problem? Maybe not. The UK might have to rely on open immigration in order to become financially sustainable, according to brand new research. 3 out of 4 countries will have a shrinking population by 2050, largely down to falling birth rates. Now, a study has been published in The Lancet Journal, and it reckons that by 2100, we won't be alive, dear listener, you and me, I don't think so anyway, over 97% of countries will have fertility rates below the level needed to maintain their population rise. Now, you and I think we agree there is a depopulation agenda at play, and it is multifaceted. You know, the environment is a big, big, big player here. They use the environment to make people sick in lots and lots of ways, or they manipulate the environment. And one of the payoffs for them in manipulating the environment and making it toxic is that it is impacting on fertility rates. It's affecting sperm counts. It's affecting the reproductive systems of men and women. There's no doubt about that. Geoengineering, non-ionizing radiation, the food that we eat, all of this is at play. And it's making people very, very ill in many ways. And it's also, in my opinion, impacting fertility rates, no doubt about it. So there you are, the Lancet Journal saying, you know, in a few years' time, there will need to be open immigration because birth rates falling will mean that the UK will not be able to maintain its own population. Amazing. They've quoted Dr. Natalia Pattachardjee. Natalia Pattachardjee, the co-lead author and lead research scientist from the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation at the University of Washington in the US, she said the implications are immense. These future trends in fertility rates and live births will completely reconfigure the global economy and the international balance of power, and will also necessitate reorganising societies. I've been listening to BBC Breakfast Radio and Television for most of my life. I do this, of course, for the Richie Allen Show as well. And at least every couple of weeks, if not every month, there is a story about how more and more people are looking to access fertility treatment on the NHS because they just can't become pregnant. Amazing, isn't it? They are snowed under, the NHS, with people who want fertility treatment, meaning that people, in some cases, are bankrupting themselves, taking out massive loans, people who can't afford it. I'm talking about young men and women, because they need to go private. And to go private, to have fertility treatment, it can be very expensive, because they are shagging like the clappers, I don't say that for a laugh, and can't become pregnant. What's going on? Lots. Lots is going on, I would say. Let's move on. Let's move on. The Mirror. UN slams Tories for demonising disabled people as policies say they're undeserving citizens. Now, at a meeting in Geneva this week, the United Nations Committee on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities said the UK government's policies are contributing to the deaths of disabled people. I totally agree with this. There's no doubt about it. This comes after a special inquiry filed by the committee in 2016 found grave and systemic violations of disabled people's rights under the government's austerity and welfare reform measures. So the austerity came in 2010 when the Tories got back into power, went into government with the Lib Dems, a coalition government, and began the programme of austerity, which has not really ever gone away, has it? And this has been particularly devastating for people with disabilities. No doubt about it. I know this because I hear from people with disabilities all the time. And before the scam in 2020, the Richie Allen Show often featured people living with disabilities talking about how their benefits had been reduced, attacked, how they'd been demonised by being forced to go to tribunals where their dignity was basically torn to pieces, where they were told that, you know, they were skiving and defrauding the system and made to feel like nothing in many of these meetings. This is still going on. It's disgusting. I mean, it really is disgusting, you know. What sort of a society? I mean, don't you measure how a society functions and whether it's a fair and kind society by how it treats its worst off people? You know, people born without the use of their legs, people who've become disabled through an accident or an injury. Don't you measure how decent a place is by how you treat the worst off people? But this horrendous UN report says it's just horrible in Britain and in so-called first world countries. The UK is ranking further and further down the scale in terms of how it treats its disabled people. It's disgusting. I mean, it really is. Anyway, The Telegraph is running with one. Biden unveils sweeping crackdown on petrol cars in push to go electric. Surprise, 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 surprise. You know, we often see the United States as the home of the car, the home of the combustion engine. You know, nobody loves their cars and the open roads like our friends in America. Well, Biden is with the program. He's no different than any European head of state or any world head of state. He's been told what to do by the same people telling Rishi Sunak what to do. They're going after the cars. Half of all cars sold in America will run on electricity by 2030. According to Biden, he announced this yesterday. Strict new European-style tailpipe emission rules. They're coming after the cars. They're coming after the cars. Of course they are. It's all part of Agenda 2030. You hope that the home of the motor car, that Americans will rise up against this stuff, that the industry itself will take on Biden, but there's no sign of any such thing happening. Listen, I'm going to take my leave of you now while I go and prepare Thursday's Richie Allen radio show. Those were the best of the papers for Thursday, the 21st of March 2021. Have a good old day, won't you, wherever you are, and I hope you join me at 4 o'clock for the live radio show. Until then, from the Baldy Gammon, it is farewell.